Okay, now here's a big issue. So competitive, the states that are really growing don't force unionization into their economy. People can choose whether to join a union or not. I believe that's the right thing. And I'm not advocating that Illinois become a right-to-work state. I do not advocate that. But I do advocate local governments, local voters, being able to decide for themselves whether to be right-to-work areas, right-to-work zones. That's allowed under federal labor law. And that would allow our communities, especially those that are suffering from high unemployment, counties and municipalities that are suffering from high unemployment, to put in right-to-work zones, or what I call employee empowerment zones, in their areas to attract businesses so that we can compete with Indiana and Michigan and Tennessee and Texas that don't have forced unionization like we do here. And we don't have to do it statewide to compete. I'm not advocating statewide, but I want local voter control of this issue so we can have economic empowerment, employee empowerment zones. Big deal to help us compete. And here's some of the statistics based upon the forced unionization versus worker choice, employee freedom to join or not. States that go to employee choice, you can see economic output goes up 1.8% on average and employment 1%. Here's the numbers that would mean for Illinois. Just by that change on the regulation would mean 61,000 more jobs, and I think that's low. And it would very quickly mean another almost $700 million of tax revenue just from that that freedom to choose for workers. It's a big deal. It's a different growth trajectory for us. And again, if folks, communities that want to have unions and encourage them and force members and workers to join, you can decide that. And if communities that don't want that and they want to compete with Indiana and Michigan, et cetera, they can choose that. I believe in local voters being able to decide these issues. We don't have to force that one policy across the state. Give local voters a voice. Let local voters decide this issue. And here's the interesting data for states that allow employee choice versus those that don't. On the rate of growth of income growth in jobs. The growth in jobs is more than double the forced unionization states versus freedom states. Growth in compensation, almost double. And look at that, cost of living adjusted per capita disposable income. So in forced unionization states, they got lower disposable income than in freedom states. That would surprise people, or some people who would argue that we need more forced unionization to force up wages. Look at that and think about that. We're gonna talk more about that. Competition and growth is the long run way to get rising wages, not force through some process. That's a big deal. This is a big, big deal. We got to talk more about it. Okay, so now, we need to be supporting our disadvantaged citizens, our vulnerable, the folks, our developmentally disabled, our handicapped, our low-income kids in poverty, our elderly residents in poverty. We need to help the vulnerable citizens. How do we do that? Let's look first. I'm a believer in Medicaid. I believe we should have a program to help provide healthcare services to low-income families. Look at, though, what's going on in Illinois. There's our population, which is basically flatlined. People have been leaving by choice, but the birth rate has been higher than the death rate. And birth rate being higher than death rate, that's a wonderful thing. Think about this as a challenge, though, for our services of our government. People are living longer. This is one of the reasons that we're growing. And people who live longer need support services. You get in your 80s, your 90s, you need support. And that puts a strain on government. And on births, every child is God's gift to all of us. It's a wonderful thing. But you know what? Almost 40% of births in Illinois are to single women, not two-parent families. And a huge portion of those are to single teenage women. That, in terms of support and education and community service and support for women, especially teenage women growing up in poverty with a baby, that's a huge challenge for us. Huge challenge. I wish I had the answer, but I tell you, it's a challenge that we haven't facing all our communities. And it's not just Illinois. This is a national challenge. I wish I had the answer, but we've got to keep that in mind. But look at our Medicaid spending has been going through the roof, and our population is flat. Talk about unsustainable. There's one. And I want to be able to support Medicaid, but we have got to get a handle around this. Have to. We don't have any choice. If we want to really protect our families, we got to get a handle on this. And here's a big deal. Overall government spending in the state and our job growth. Flat line on jobs, government spending through the roof. Talk about unsustainable. This is disaster. This does not work. And this gets all to the issues we've been talking about. We need those lines moving in parallel, and we need a booming economy creating jobs. We need to be a very attractive place for business. This doesn't work, and this is the trajectory we're on. And all the politicians want to do is figure out how to raise taxes to keep that spending line high. You know what will happen to jobs when we raise up taxes more? They're going to stay flat if we're lucky and maybe go down. That's not a solution. What the politicians have been talking about, not a solution. And this one really frosts me. If you look at, so here's our debt. And our debt, our political leaders, unfortunately, have not been honest with us about the debt. They talk about our bonded debt as debt, but we got to include where we borrow from bonds from the bond market. But when we don't pay our bills, that's debt. We don't talk about it that way. We say it's our unpaid bills. On a lot of the bills in Illinois, we don't pay them. We are paying 9%, and in some of them, many of them, 12% interest on our unpaid bills. Think about it. We're all paying 12% interest in not paying our bills. Oh, my goodness. And for small service providers to the state, it's forcing them to go bankrupt because they're not getting paid by the state. And for larger service providers who can survive, they actually kind of like it. They're like, I can't make 12% of my money. You go ahead, don't pay me. We're fine. Where the taxpayers are paying the 12%. This is mismanagement. And what really frosts me, and by the way, not paying into the pensions on the actuarial amount every year is basically borrowing from the pensions at 8.3%, because that's what we make long-term on our pensions, going back 30 years, 8.3%. So when we don't fund our pension, that's money that could be making 8.3%, and it's going to get paid later. It's just borrowing from the future now to put the money into something else. And both parties, Republicans and Democrats, have been doing this for years, and it's been a big part of the problem in the state. We've been borrowing from the pensions at 8.3%, crushing our taxpayers today for those decisions that we made over the last, pick your number, 30 years. But look at this, what really gets me, we raise taxes in fiscal year 10, so we higher income fiscal year 11 through 14, our debt's still going up. We put in a brutally high income tax hike, our debt's still going up. Come on, this is not sustainable. It's a disaster. Waiting to happen. It's happening, actually, not waiting to happen. And here's an interesting one, inside the cost of government. My attitude is every dollar spent unnecessarily inside government is a dollar that can't stay in a small business owner's pocket to create a job, or a homeowner's pocket of a struggling family trying to make ends meet, or is a dollar that can't go to help a low-income child or an elderly resident living in poverty. We need to be, we have a moral obligation to be careful with our taxpayer dollars and get them where they should go. Look at this. There's been a decline in the number of state people, government workers, but the payroll's still going up. I still don't totally understand this. I think it's a lot of overtime, a lot of manipulation of the system, but look at that. That's unbelievable. Number of people working going down, payroll still rising. And every dollar spent unnecessarily is out of our social services safety net and out of our economy to create jobs. This is a mess. I got to get my hands around this. I don't know the answer on this yet, but we're going to work on it. Our insurance cost for our government workers is one of the worst. Our employees contribute much less to their insurance, but the premiums are among the highest. Not sustainable. Not competitive. This is something that surprises folks when I show this. And again, I believe people should have a good retirement. Our workers, everybody should have a decent retirement. But we look at here, this is a person, this is not a above average person, this is a little bit below average. A worker who's an average state worker with an average career earnings of $38,000, $39,000, which is pretty typical, little below the average. Over their career, they pay in $40,000 into the pension. That's the average for somebody of the average person. In retirement, they take out over $820,000. And this is only if they live 20 years after retirement, and people are living longer than 20 years after retirement. That math doesn't work. And when you have a demographic shift where people are living longer and people are retiring at a rapid rate and people are retiring faster than are coming into the workforce, this is a total time bomb. We got to change the fundamental nature of our pension system. This math does not work. We've had a lot of abuses in the system. One of them is spiking. There's a lot of the contracts and negotiations allow people to jack up their salary a lot right before they retire. And it's the last couple years that get calculated to do the pension benefit. So now, the spiking used to be really high. It used to be, 10%, 12%, 15%. The politicians woke up after some complaints and took it down to 6%, but 6% became the floor. Now it's contracted at 6% spiking. That doesn't solve the problem. That just moved the problem around a little bit, but it's still a big problem. And there are folks who would be temporary teachers or substitute teacher for a few days and get a pension. There are folks who have two or three pensions. The system is designed to take care of our folks in retirement. It should do that, but it's been abused. There's a lot of bad things have gone in the system, and we got to change it. It's not fair to the taxpayers, and it's not sustainable. It's not fair to the honest workers either. Okay, so now let's talk. We touched on project labor agreements before, but here's a little bit for cost. We talked about the 18%. This is big, big money, 18% when you look at the Illinois Department of Transportation. Billions of dollars get spent here when we have to spend 18% more. That's a lot fewer roads we can build. That's a lot fewer dams we can construct. That's fewer schools like Richland we can build. Here's one study, $1 billion out of the tollway costs toll payers $1 billion more because of that process. Here's the IDOT. So here's an interesting thing. The PLAs that I mentioned earlier, where the unions and the government, the politicians negotiate the deal, then they force that on the bidders. That really took off under Blagojevich in about 11, 12 years ago. It wasn't really much of an issue. Now it's up over 50, 60% of the contracts are forced, these project labor agreements. And with the savings, you can see we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars every year, more than we would have otherwise if we didn't have that. And I'll show in a minute, when you look at the unions that caused this negotiation are the same ones who've given tens of millions of dollars to Blagojevich and Quinn. It's a conflict of interest where they're getting a special deal for the politicians in their election that's costing toll road drivers and our schools like Richland and other beneficiaries of our construction projects to spend hundreds of millions of dollars more. It's corrupt, it's a conflict, and it's hurting our economy and hurting schools like Richland and roads like here, Macon County, Sangamon County, everywhere. Here's more savings from the Capital Development Board. I won't go into the detail. It's the same issues. But look at back under Blagojevich, it was very small. Look at now, it's rocketed, especially with Quinn. Look at what Quinn did. Look at what Quinn did, took it, doubled, forced these PLAs in there. And look at where his campaign cash came from. You won't, it ain't a coincidence. Corrupt conflict of interest. It's PLAs and it is forcing what the pay scale is if you contract with the state. We've touched on this earlier. This is costing taxpayers, schools like Richland, other projects. We can't do as much because our money gets spent. The projects all cost more. We can't do as much to help our citizens because of this. Oh, and here we go. So other states have begun to dealt with. So Illinois finally woke up and stopped the corruption for years in business. So today, a business that contracts with the state can't give state political contributions anymore. That's a good thing. Frankly, Republicans use that system a lot to get campaign cash for the Republicans, and then they would contract with the businesses and give them preferential treatment. Republicans did that kind of shenanigans for a long time. That's mostly, well, it's been diminished. I won't say it's gone, but it's diminished. But Illinois restrict businesses, but we don't restrict the government unions. They contract 100% with the state government. And they give unlimited to the politicians. And how's it going? If you're an elected official and I'm a union leader and I say, you're running for office, I'll give you $5 million of my dues for your election. I'll give you 5,000 of my members to work for your campaign. They're all paid by the taxpayers, but I'll have them do it when they can. And then after you get in, let's negotiate my pension and my work rules and my health care. I mean, the taxpayers on the outside, it's a conflict of interest. It's a closed loop. And this is what's going on. Big problem. And it's driving up our bureaucracy, and jobs are leaving. It's that closed loop up there. That's what's going on. Contracting, the unions that contract with the state. I think it's the number one conflict of interest in our government today. Here's the average, almost $900 a year. And here's the numbers. The top government unions, virtually all of it, $25 million to Quinn and Blagojevich to get some of those deals. $25 million, a lot of money. A lot of money in campaigns. And here's the bottom line challenge for us. Here's where we want the money to go. We want it in the classrooms. We want it in with the teachers teaching you at Richland College. We want the money in the classroom with the teachers for their current pay. And with the students, we want the money with their service recipients, we want the money with their family in need. And every dollar that gets taken out on the way there keeps the dollar out of where it should end up and out of the pocket of the business owners that are creating that tax dollar in the first place. That's got to change. We got to focus on that the bureaucracy there. That's where we're focused. And here's the really big deal. Everybody in Springfield I talk to, the politicians want to talk about the income tax rate. What we've got to look at is the tax base, but then really focus on how do we get a booming economy, because that's part of the multiplier that creates the tax revenue. If we're booming, rising incomes, more sales, more tax revenues, that's the real answer to the quality of life in the American dream come true, and we're not focused enough on that. I'm going to focus like a laser on that.